today on Ag News Daily.
When I think about a farmer who has a multitude of challenges, they don't just need one native trait that is working in their favor. They need a top-to-bottom agronomic defensive powerhouse. I can't think of an agronomic score in Z-Series that did not see a step forward with these new genetics.
Welcome to the Ag News Daily podcast and videocast. It's kind of fun to be here on the first video edition of the Ag News Daily podcast. So if you're listening to us on the podcast platform, you always do, now you can go check us out on YouTube.
That's right. Find us at Ag News Daily on YouTube is our channel handle, Tanner. But we've got an action-packed episode for our listeners today. We've got a lot of headlines to bring everyone.
That's right. And we're not going to change our stories and methods. So let's dive right into this week's weather headlines from across the U.S. In the Northeast, a cold front moving through the Northeast will bring scattered rain showers and cooler temperatures to areas like New York and New England. While in the Midwest here, we will be dry with windy conditions. Eastern Nebraska and western Iowa might see scattered thunderstorms. They'll be possible also in parts of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. Unfortunately, though, in the southern plains, we still have critical fire weather conditions in southwestern Kansas, Oklahoma, and the Texas panhandles. As we head west, though, a mix of rain and snow showers is expected in the higher elevations of Colorado, Wyoming, as well as other areas. But meanwhile, the coastal areas of California will experience morning fog, partly cloudy skies to round out the rest of the day. But that's the news for around the nation today.
That's right. Seeing some cooler temperatures already as we head into the weekend, Tanner. But diving into some other news headlines for today, earlier this week, Tyson Foods announced the permanent closure of its pork processing plant in Perry, Iowa. Mayor Dick Cavanaugh of Perry expressed deep concerns, stating, quote, "It's a big blow to the community. It's our largest employer in the area." That plant, which employs about 1,200 people, is slated to close its doors officially on June 28th. That closure comes amidst financial challenges for Tyson's pork business, with an adjusted operating loss of $128 million this last fiscal year. Steve Meyer, chief livestock economist for EverAg, shared estimates earlier this week that the Perry plant processes approximately 9,000 pigs daily, contributing to about 2% of the total U.S. pork production. This news follows similar decisions, including Smithfield Foods' decision to terminate contracts with 26 hog farms in Utah due to oversupply and weakened consumer demand. Smithfield has also previously announced the closure of a pork plant in North Carolina, alongside shutting down 35 hog farm sites in Missouri. We'll continue to bring listeners updates on this evolving story, Tanner. But in some other meat headlines this week, the USDA made some big waves.
That's right. More protein-related headlines. The USDA announced this week that their food processors will be able to start using a product of the USA labeling on packages of meat, poultry, and egg products. Adding clarity to this label, they stated it would be only allowed to bear this label if the animals were born, raised, harvested, and processed in the United States. Until now, labels could be pasted on those foreign meats if they were only processed in the United States. Vilsack announced this change in labeling at the National Farmers Union Convention in Phoenix and shared that consumers will greatly benefit from the new restrictions. The new rule will take in effect 60 days from now, and compliance will become mandatory on January 1st of 2026.
Exciting news there for U.S. farmers.
That's right.
It is. Show their products.
We have more news coming out of the general economy, though. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell shared comments last week stating the U.S. Central Bank was not far from gaining the confidence it needs to dial back policy restrictions and begin cutting interest rates. However, a report from the U.S. Labor Department on Tuesday still showed a solid increase in February consumer prices amidst higher costs. The private sector activity also showed slow signs of decline in January. Job and wage growth slowed in February, while other indicators suggest strong future production weaknesses in the commercial property market, as well as overall economic uncertainty. Major U.S. banks like Wells Fargo, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, UBS Wealth Management, and more have now publicly come out stating that their forecast for the first rate cut from the U.S. Federal Reserve will come in June. Globally, though, factors mitigating inflation, such as productivity increases in China, the deflationary impact there, and other recent data could cause a rise in other inflationary indicators. So we'll see what happens as the next Fed meeting comes about. But Delaney, we've got other headlines to hit today, too.
We do. As we think about the greater economy, we saw over the weekend President Biden signed into law a $460 billion appropriations bill with funding through September 30th for the USDA and five other federal departments, providing now full-year funding after four stopgap bills. The House and Senate leaders have a March 22nd deadline to agree and pass that funding bill for the rest of the federal government. Under the bill passed, the USDA will become a member on a case-by-case basis of the Committee of Financial Investment in the United States, which determines if transactions pose a risk to national security. WIC programs were allotted just over $7 billion and is a $1 billion increase compared to the year prior, noting higher food prices and higher enrollment. But the work isn't done here, Tanner. The White House has also released their proposal for their fiscal year 2025 budget on Monday. The budget earmarked a whopping $7.3 trillion and will now make its way to Congress, with that fiscal year to begin on October 1st.
We'll see if any progress gets made.
That's right. But in other D.C. headlines, the House Agriculture Committee recently released a plan and a path forward for foreign labor. The Agriculture Labor Working Group released its final report on how to improve the H-2A guest worker program. It includes more than 20 recommendations to streamline the program and make labor more affordable for farmers. Of those recommendations included, we saw streamlining recruitment efforts of H-2A employees, expanding H-2A programs beyond seasonal employment, and standardizing employee compensation. The report also provides recommendations for expanding worker protection for H-2A employees, and this is probably a long time coming.
Yeah, I would say so. We also saw some breaking news coming out of the ethanol industry. Controversy is still going to swirl around carbon capture and sequestration pipeline projects, but one ethanol plant is pioneering its own path, Delaney. Red Trail Energy, located in Richardton, North Dakota, has become the world's first ethanol plant to join a voluntary carbon market. This move signals a paradigm shift in sustainability and innovation within the ethanol industry. RTE's initiative involves capturing and storing CO2 that's produced during their ethanol fermentation process in a well on-site 6,500 feet below their plant. To date, they've already sequestered over 247,000 tons of CO2. This has helped them generate carbon removal certificates that are available to be purchased by companies seeking to offset their carbon emissions. I'm sure we'll have plenty more headlines coming out of this as well. We also saw ethanol production and inventories fall to their lowest levels since February 16th, and production was at its lowest level in the last 4 weeks, Delaney.
Well, we also saw U.S. crude inventories fall for the first time in 7 weeks. The Department of Energy report this week showed U.S. crude inventories shrank just over 1.5 million barrels last week, keeping stocks well below year-ago levels. While OPEC earlier this week stuck with a strong forecast for global oil demand in 2024 and 2025, WTI crude oil prices continue to oscillate just below $80 per barrel. The bears will continue to have more support due to Russia's export cuts, because, Tanner, earlier this week, Russia reported multiple attacks on various oil refinery facilities. In total, three major refineries were reportedly hit with drone attacks. The most notable attack was Russia's second largest facility, the Lukoil North Sea facility just east of Moscow. The Kansas City Morning Energy Brief newsletter summarized Ukraine's latest strike on Russian energy infrastructure, noting that Ukraine successfully inflicted damage on those three major oil refineries with dozens of drones and rockets. The Lukoil facility, oil, which is Russia's, of course, second largest facility, produces approximately 11% of Russia's finished product. And Russia reported that they've halted production at this facility and others. But there could be longer-term implications here to Russia's war efforts, as oil has largely been providing and footing the bill here for those efforts. Russia recently placed a six-month ban on their oil exports to control domestic prices. As we head into another election here, this might be a way of President Putin kind of putting his stamp on the next election.
I know, and it'll be interesting to see from the Ukrainian side what comes next. We have other Black Sea headlines. The Hungarian Prime Minister Orban made a controversial remark this week regarding the ongoing conflict. Orban stated that if former U.S. President Donald Trump returns to power in November, that Trump would effectively end the war in Ukraine by simply cutting off funding that goes to Kiev. These comments follow a meeting between Trump and Orban at the Mar-a-Lago facility on Friday. Sources familiar with the matter described this meeting as social and friendly and stated there was no specific agenda being discussed. But meanwhile, the Ukrainian military intelligence chief announced that they have plans for a serious operation in Crimea, the peninsula that was illegally annexed by Russia in 2014. In a televised program aired in Ukraine, they highlighted recent Ukrainian attacks on Russia's Black Sea fleet as a signal to residents of Crimea that they are not forgotten since the annexation. There will be many more headlines coming out of this as well, Delaney, but when we quote people, I kind of want to use air quotes.
I think you can now that people can see you.
I think that'd be great.
Well, Tanner, as we transition into kind of our fun story, we've got our headline of the weekend. This one's a showstopper, folks, as police in Nigeria are holding a goat on suspicion of attempted armed robbery.
A goat?
A goat.
That's right, Delaney. Vigilantes took a black and white beast into the police, saying that it was an armed robber who had been accused of using black magic to transform himself into a goat in order to escape the arrest after trying to steal a Mazda 323 car. The group of vigilante men, while they were on patrol, saw hoodlums attempting to rob this car. They pursued them. However, one of the victims escaped, while the others said they turned into a goat, state police spokesmen are reporting. They cannot confirm this story, but the goat is in their custody. They cannot base the information on something mystical. It is something that will have to be proven scientifically that a human can be turned into a goat, said local police. Belief in witchcraft is widespread in parts of Nigeria, Africa, which is its most populous nation. Residents came to the police station, though, Delaney, to see this goat and began taking photographs, posting to social media. One national paper has a picture of this goat on his knees next to a pile of straw.
Do you think that was a photoshopped photo?
I want to know where they got the straw into jail.
Oh, Tanner, well, that's a good one there to wrap up our news. As you and I were at Commodity Classic here just a few weeks ago, we were part of the record number in attendance. But amongst some of the exciting new updates announced were new products, new equipment, and a new soybean seed series. Pioneer officially launched their new Z-Series soybean, building on 50 years of leadership and innovation in soybean research and variety development. We got up with Liz Knutson to chat more in depth about the new Z-Series and the exciting development it brings to farmers. Well, we are getting ready to talk to Liz Knutson, the soybean marketing lead for Pioneer, talking about the new Z-Series soybean that has officially hit the market post-Commodity Classic. Liz, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Happy to be here.
So we're here in Houston, and there's been a lot of references to the moon landing and NASA itself. Would you say that this new Z-Series soybean is a giant leap forward?
Yeah, I was just going to go for that reference of one small step for man, one giant leap for farmers. Feels right with the Z-Series coming to market in 2024.
That's perfect. Delaney, I know you have a lot of background, too, with this as well. So I might just sit off to the side and smile while
hey,
the two of you.
Hey, we're happier here.
Yes, that's right.
Well, yeah, I should mention to our listeners, in full disclosure, Pioneers hired me to help kind of be the spokesperson for the Z-Series. But it's been really fun to get to know the brand very intimately from the back end, because the Z-Series has been in the works for many years. And especially the marketing efforts here over the last almost year, I've had to sit on this big news, Tanner, and haven't been able to say anything to you or our listeners.
She's actually held to the what she's supposed to. I'm sitting here hanging out
she
there.
She signed
with
the NDA.
No
she's done well. She's
so
done well.
I'm excited to share with our listeners today and learn right alongside you.
Absolutely. We're excited to share the news. I mean, those who have planted A-Series soybeans, I'm sure have had, or I hope have had, strong experiences, positive experiences, good yields, exceptional agronomics. Really what we're hoping for with Z-Series is to bring even more of that. So more yield, more agronomics and enhanced disease protection, and more exclusive varieties for farmers.
So you're telling me, Delaney, that now they have farmers covered from A to Z?
Nailed it.
Yes.
That's the whole premise of the marketing campaign. Well done.
I love this. I'm a quick learner.
Well, Liz, you know, speaking of the marketing campaign, we had the A-Series. Now we've got the Z-Series. How did they come up with that name?
Yeah, so, I mean, the sausage making behind it was almost 2 years worth of work. And this is our sixth series as Pioneer Soybeans. We started breeding beans back in the 70s. We celebrated our 50th anniversary in 2023.
Wow.
And our first series came out was the B series. Then we moved to M, Y to T, A obviously has been there. So it's not like we have a rhyme or reason of how we've moved through the alphabet. But at the same time, as we thought about what's going to signal to the marketplace that we truly have made this step change in yield in agronomics. We couldn't think of a better way to capture that than moving from the top of the alphabet to the bottom, moving from A to Z.
So I know a lot of our growers are continuing to battle different issues within the field, and a lot of that comes from disease pressure that's available. What type of resistance does this series offer?
Yeah, it's a great question. When I think about a farmer who has a multitude of challenges, they don't just need one native trait that is working in their favor. They need a top-to-bottom agronomic defensive powerhouse, right? And they need a couple options depending on where they farm. Are you east of the river? Are you west? Do you have an exceptionally dry year? Do you have a very wet year? I can't think of an agronomic score in Z series that did not see a step forward with these new genetics. So I'll just pick on white mold. I spent the last 3 years of my career in southern Wisconsin, where every year is a white mold year, it seems like, unless it doesn't rain. White mold took an almost full score improvement. So let's just say on average, our scores were a 5 on the scale of 1 to 10. We've now moved to almost a 6 for the entire class of Z series varieties moving forward. Those aren't exact numbers, right? But just as a point of reference, the same could be said for iron deficiency chlorosis or sudden death syndrome. We saw significant changes in those agronomic trait scores, which means farmers have a partner in the field to help them battle those tough diseases and pests.
Yeah, Delaney, that sounds like big benefits.
It does, and it's not just disease, like you mentioned, Liz. Yield, obviously, at the end of the day, farmers want to know, what's the ROI on my yield? So it's not only increased yield through the new Z series, but it's also yield stability, which I think is a really unique point that we're starting to hear become more of a buzzword in the industry.
Absolutely. Yield stability, I think, has been the talk of corn for a number of years. You can have an ace hybrid that absolutely knocks it out of the park, but in a tough year when it doesn't rain, is that thing able to do what you need it to do to still bring a crop in the fall? We approach our soybean breeding with that same level of intensity. So we're looking for something that can have the top end yield. In the case of Z series, we're talking about a 2.7 bushel to the acre yield advantage over our current A series, right? It's almost alarming. That's $35 an acre on average, depending on our market price we're looking at for the day. That improvement in ROI, we also then see supported by those agronomic traits we're talking about.
So what's the availability commercially for these soybeans? Is this a 2024 planting opportunity?
There definitely is an opportunity. You'll see almost 500,000 acres of Z series planted across the U.S. this year.
Wow.
So a small piece of the pie when we're talking about 90 million acres of soybeans. But at the same time, as we move into 2025, almost half of what we sell as Pioneer will be Z series varieties. So the fastest launch in Pioneer soybean history, which we're so excited about, and we'll have lots of plots in the field come 2024. So farmers have the opportunity to see, touch, feel, experience it themselves.
Well, hanging out at Commodity Classic this week, Z series has been the talk of the town on maybe the agronomic side. And it sounds like growers are really excited. We've had quite a few sessions at Commodity Classic with growers, with breeders. Farmers are excited, Liz. What is some of the feedback you're hearing from farmers this week and some of your discussions?
That's a great question. I always love coming to Commodity Classic. Not that you don't love another farm show, but this is where I always feel like we have the most robust conversations. Talk of the booth lately has been around soybean cyst nematode, and I've spent a lot of time sharing what Z series will be able to bring. So I mentioned that this is the largest advancement class in Pioneer history, at least for soybeans. I can't speak for corn. With 50 new varieties, 13 of those bring a peaking source of resistance to help manage SCN, America's number one soybean pest, right? So as I think about peaking, we've used PI88, 788 for a number of years. It does the job. It does a nice job. But sometimes you need support. So to have an alternative trait or an alternative source of native resistance that we can rotate on our farms, moving from PI88, 788 to Peking, it's just a good option for farmers. So that's something that we've spent a lot of time talking about. Yield, obviously, like you said, Delaney, everybody wants to know, is it real? And everybody who asks me, is it real? I'll say, could you plant some for me? I'd love a plot, right? We need more data. Yeah. We need to see it. We need to prove it out. Our impact testing is extensive at Pioneer. We spend years working on bringing these products to market. We don't just do it on a whim, right? We feel confident if we've advanced these that they will do exactly what we're telling you they'll do. But then let's take it to your field and really put them to the test.
Well, I think that's part of the interesting thing to me that I learned on the backside or maybe behind the scenes is just the amount of R&D that goes into it. The years of foresight you have to say, this is going to be a problem for farmers that we want to address 5 or 10 years out into the future. And with that, you've been able to really focus on a specific number of varieties and traits that are going to be available for that 2025 season. Liz, is it something like 50 that will be available?
Over 50. Yeah, it's a big advancement class. It's our largest as Pioneer Soybeans.
So as our listeners are here and willing to help, what are some things that they can do to help you move the Z Series forward?
That's a great question. I haven't been asked that before. I mean, obviously, I'm going to tell you to plant them, right? But something that I'm really interested in as I think about Z Series, we test, again, I mentioned our impact testing. That's a broader research and development effort, bringing our new varieties to a specific type of field. Let's say we're trying to look at sandy ground. We're trying to look at, I don't know, a highly clay soil. I would love to see more plots go in the ground this year so that we can really understand variety by variety what's going to do best where. I mentioned that over 50% of our volume next year will be sold to Z-Series.
Right.
Help us figure out where to position those for maximum success, because as Pioneer, that's what it's all about. If I go back to 1953 or whatever it was when Henry Wallace wrote The Long Look, we strive to produce the best products on the market. And I believe the last point is something around helpful management suggestions to our growers. Help us make the right suggestions by testing those varieties and really seeing what they can do.
Well, I think our growers are probably excited to get their hands on the Z Series for themselves, Tanner. I know it's going to be small commercial availability in 2024, but get to talking with your dealers to get it lined up for 2025, or to your point, Liz, to have maybe some of those opportunities to get a plot into your farm. Liz, if our listeners do have questions on that, is their local Pioneer dealer the best person to talk to?
Absolutely. I think there are two places you can always go for more information from Pioneer. First and foremost is your local Pioneer sales representative. They know your farms. They know your fields. They're going to know which varieties they believe will be the best fit for you. And then second, I'd point you to pioneer.com/Z-Series. We just launched that. They'll see you there, Delaney, and hear more of those Beer with a Breeder conversations we've been hosting here for the last year, where we really talk about how did we bring Z-Series to market?
Well, if that's only reason they go is to see Delaney, then it's worth the trip.
It seems like it's worth it, right?
Well, I appreciate you making the trip over to interview with us and for taking the time to tell us about Z-Series today.
Absolutely. Appreciate the opportunity, and we're excited to see what Z-Series can do in 24 and beyond.
Tanner, as we take a look at this week's market recap, last week's WASD report really had very short impact on the market. So we continue to chew through this week fresh fodder in the grains coming out of South America. For the week, selling pressure and weak price action kept a lid on the corn markets. Although markets aren't yet settled for the day, as of Thursday's close, May corn futures were 6 cents lower on the week. Adding some fresh fundamentals into the equation was the Brazilian CONAB report, which lowered their production numbers early in the week for both Brazilian corn and soybeans, now reflecting numbers well below USDA figures. Corn production for the 2023-2024 marketing year was cut by 944,000 tons to come in at 112.8 million metric tons. If realized, this would be a 14.5% drop in corn production year over year for Brazil. But that did give a little life to the markets earlier in the week. Traders are also watching the shorter-term 10-day forecast, where we are expecting to see a healthy amount of rainfall in key growing areas such as Mato Grosso.
That's right. Soybeans have been volatile this week as well, as we saw May futures rally sharply on Thursday, only to close near where they opened. CONAB also lowered their soybean production estimate for Brazilian beans by another 2.5 million metric tons, now suggesting we see production come in at 146.9 million metric tons. Their estimate is now 297 million bushels below that of the USDA's estimate reflected in that March WASD report, which we'll put into perspective for our listeners, Delaney, is equivalent to the state of Ohio's annual soybean production.
I always think that helps to hear it kind of on that basis, Tanner.
Absolutely.
Well, on Monday, we also saw China cancel another batch of U.S. wheat export shipments, adding to an already record number of cancellations. Private exporters exited the purchase of 264,000 metric tons of U.S. soft red winter wheat to China, making this the third straight session with a cancellation announcement. This cancellation makes in total 504,000 tons, which is the most in USDA history going back to 1999. That news appeared to weigh heavily on the Chicago wheat futures, falling to 523 per bushel following the announcement before eventually making their way back higher on the day. And Thursday brought triple-digit losses for April live cattle, while April feeders largely followed suit for the week. April lean hogs remain at a discount to the June contract, still $16.40 at a discount, and producer margins remain tight. But Thursday afternoon brought a stronger close for the market. And Tanner, that's a look at this week's market summary.
That's right. Listeners, we appreciate you taking the trip with us through the first video and audio version of the Ag News Daily podcast and now YouTube channel. We're going to need your help, though. We want your feedback. We will continue to bring daily content to you across all of our socials, so we're going to need you to follow, we're going to need you to subscribe, and we're going to need them to tell their friends.
That's right. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, I got it right that time.
Yes.
YouTube and TikTok. Be sure to follow, subscribe, like, and send us some comments. Send us your feedback. We're really eager to know if our listeners are liking this new video format.
Yeah. I would say a couple of key things that we need your help with is it's a real problem about what I'm doing with my hands during the video portion.
Is that like the
air quotes? Oh, yeah. The Ron Burgundy.
Yeah.
But it is. You keep them crossed. You put them in your lap. Do you use your air quotes? But we really need your help on the background for our video. We purposely set up today with Delaney having a different background than myself. So if you like one better than the other, you need to let us know, and maybe that'll be the background of choice.
Or maybe they can send us their farm photos and we can get a nice image printed out to have behind us too. We could swap them out each week.
That would be great. Or headlines from their local areas. If you want us to report on your news, let us know. But Delaney, what a great end to the week. I hope you as listeners enjoy this and tell all your friends about it. But today, what do you say? Is it time to let them go?
Let's let them go.